John 9. As he went along, he saw a man blind from birth. His disciples asked him, "Rabbi, who sinned, this man or his parents, that he was born blind?" "Neither this man nor his parents sinned," said Jesus. "But this happened so that the works of God might be displayed in him. As long as it is day, we must do the works of him who sent me. Night is coming when no one can work. While I am in the world, I am the light of the world." Having said this, he spit on the ground, made some mud with the saliva, and put it on the man's eyes. "Go," he told him, "wash in the pool of Siloam." This word means sent. So the man went and washed and came home seeing. His neighbors and those who had formerly seen him begging asked, "Isn't this the same man who used to sit and beg?" Some claimed that he was. Others said, "No, he only looks like him." But he himself insisted, "I am the man." "How then were your eyes opened?" they asked. He replied, "The man they called Jesus made some mud and put it on my eyes. He told me to go to Siloam and wash. So I went and washed, and then I could see." "Where is this man?" they asked him. "I don't know," he said.
Well, who gets the credit? Who gets the blame? We're really good at that game, aren't we? Credit and blame. How many of you watched the Super Bowl last week? Part of it, anyway. Coach of the Saints, Jim Payton, got a lot of credit for gutsy coaching. For doing that onside kick at the beginning of the second half. Boy, he must be a really great coach. And look what had happened. They won the Super Bowl. But what if it hadn't worked? All the blame that he would have gotten for making that call. President of Binghamton University, Dr. DeFleur, has gotten lots of credit and lots of accolades over her years as president of that university. Binghamton University, a Best Buy in higher education, some really wonderful top quality programs. It's a great place. And all of a sudden, it's her fault. What happened in the athletic department? She gets the blame. I said to Jan, I wonder if she knows what it's like to be a preacher. Because that often works that way too. Things go well in the church and the pastor gets some of the credit. Things go badly and you know who gets the blame. We're good at that game. Who gets the credit? Who gets the blame? But we're usually especially good at the blame game. Whose fault is it? It's interesting when you look at the polls. Of course, you don't want to watch them too often or think of them too often. But you look at Congress nowadays. And there's an awful lot more people who are willing to put blame on Congress. What's the latest number I saw? 15% of people in the United States think that Congress is doing a decent job, giving them some credit. 75% say they're not doing well, they're to blame for all the problems that we have in this country. And the other 10%, I guess, are saying, well, we're not so sure. We're much quicker to give blame in many situations than we are to give credit. And so it's not really surprising that when you look at this passage that we read this morning, that the question that comes up from the mind of the, from the mouths of the disciples is, whose fault is it? As Jesus and his disciples are walking down the road and they're looking and they see this blind man, well-known beggar, standing there or sitting there alongside the road, the question is, who sinned, this man or his parents, that he was born blind? That's the question that we look at today. But the answer that Jesus gives is the answer that blesses us. At least it does me, and I trust it will bless you today too. Let's look at this question about fault. Whose fault is it? And I want us to look, first of all, at some of the common perspectives that relate to that question in our own minds. Some of the things that lead us to ask the what is probably in one way a wrong question. And part of it is that we are so caught up into the cause and effect situation. We think everything has a cause and effect. And so as Jesus and his 12 or friends are walking down the road, they see this man who is well known as a beggar. Verse 8 says, isn't this the same man who used to sit and beg? Everybody knew him. He was well known. And so it was kind of natural that the question pops out of their mind, who sinned? Whose fault is it? Because we're taught that if there's a problem, it must have a cause. We learn about cause and effect in life. We learn about it in school. And so we look at the snowstorms that have been messing up the eastern part and the southern part of the country over the last several weeks. And part of the answer is, why are we having all of that? Well, it has something to do with an El Nino out in the Pacific Ocean. And when the water gets a certain temperature there, it changes the patterns and you end up having snowstorms, this time in Washington, D.C. or Philadelphia or places like that. We know that if you don't wash your hands after touching all kinds of germy things, that you're apt to get a disease. And we know those connections, cause and effect. Well, the Jewish people, apparently in this time, had accepted the idea that there's a direct connection between a disease or a problem or something and sin. And so they're saying, there obviously was a problem here. This man is blind. That's not the natural thing. That's not the way things ought to be. Whose fault was it? And some people, apparently in that day, went so far as to believe that a person could sin in the womb. Was it this man's fault? It says he was born blind, so it wasn't like something happened when he was 3 years old and he got to become blind. He was already blind at birth. So what did he do? I think maybe that was a misreading of Psalm 51. Remember when David talks about sin, he says, surely I was sinful at birth, sinful from the time my mother conceived me. And so some people thought it must mean that that little uterus, that child in the uterus that must be able to sin at that point. But others would say, well, no, it probably has to do with the parents. It must be the parents' fault. They must have been the ones that sinned. And we know that sometimes that does happen. There is a connection between a parental sin and an effect on a child. We talk about fetal alcohol syndrome, and sometimes some of the sexually transmitted diseases or the HIV and so on that come from to a child at birth. The problem with this cause and effect thing, though, is that we run into a problem when it's all neatly laid out for us. One, two, one, two. Now, we can look at it in the big picture and say, yes, in the ultimate sense, sin causes the brokenness in our world. All evil, all disease, all death, all tragedy is a result of sin, and it is. We live in a broken world. But be careful. We get in big trouble when we insist on a one-to-one connection. This disease is caused by this sin. I think Jesus is clearly saying here in this situation, wrong question. Don't go there. But I think we got another problem when we start asking the question, whose fault is it? Who did this? And that is that we have it in the back of our minds that if there's a problem, we have to figure it out. We must come up with an answer. And maybe that's behind the question of the disciples. They look at the situation and say, I need an answer. This particular case, tell me, who gets the blame in this situation? And we haven't really changed a whole lot from the disciples in that. Because we think, too, that we have to have an answer to every problem. And we don't leave a lot of room for mystery. And the fact is, there's a lot of mystery in our world. We think we always have to figure out all the answers to the how questions. For example, we talk about creation. And we want to know, how did God do it? What's the specific? How many years ago? Did it happen this way or did it happen that way? We've got to have all the how questions answered. And it's not just creation. It's sometimes the whole question of divine providence. We believe it as Christians that God is in control. But we want to know, how does this particular event fit in? And we've got to figure it out because we must have answers. We're not good at just letting things go. I remember when we first found out about Betsy's disability when she was a baby. And I needed to know why. What caused it? Was it my fault? Was there something I did wrong? Or what? And we never got an answer. And now I'm fine. You know, okay, so there's a mystery there. And I can live with that. But it took a while to get there because I wanted to know the answer. Now, I'm not saying we ought to be apathetic and just say, oh, well, we live in a broken world, let the world, you know, so sin has its consequences, too bad. I'm thankful for all the research that people do into diseases and to try to find out what can be done to prevent a disease or can be done to respond to it. I'm thankful for all that kind of scientific work that gets done. Wouldn't it be great if we were at a point of being able to predict earthquakes? Instead of just seeing the horrible consequences of them. But I just say we need to be able to live with mystery. Difficult though it is. But the problem is not just even that we think we must have an answer. It goes even further. Another part of the perspective on this question, whose fault is it, is that we say, and we can answer all the questions. We can come up with an answer to any question there is. Human pride is a huge part of the problem here. The Pharisees represent this very well in this story. We didn't read the entire story of what happened after this man is healed, but they came up with an answer. The disciples asked the question, who sinned, this man or his parents, that he was born blind? Well, the Pharisees, by the time they talked with him for a while, they came up with an answer in verse 34. He says, you were steeped in sin at birth. How do you dare to talk back and lecture us? They threw him out of the synagogue. They knew the answer because they had it all figured out. Well, the bottom line is that God is God and I am not. The old Johnny Hart line. God is God, and I am not. There are situations that we will never be able to get all the answers to. Miracles happen, but miracles don't always happen. An accident happens, and the question is, why is one person killed and another walks away almost unscathed? You look at a family. And one child in the family is born with Down syndrome, and the other children are not. Why? And we don't have answers. And we will never have the answers to that, perhaps. But we are infected with the sin of pride that says, but if I try hard enough, eventually I will be able to come up with the answer. I'm going to. That was the original sin. That was Eve's sin. Remember, Satan tempted her by, you can become more than you are. You can be God. Pride. And maybe as we come to communion in a little bit, a good self-examination question for all of us to ask is, and so where am I still battling the sin of pride? And so the question, whose fault is it? Often comes out of some wrong presuppositions and some wrong earlier questions. But you know, Jesus gives a wonderful answer. Jesus doesn't just allow the question to go unanswered and he just ignores it or unchallenged. But he says when the disciples ask, whose fault is it? Neither this man nor his parents sinned, said Jesus. But this happened that the works of God might be displayed in him. In other words, he's saying to the disciples, first of all, you're asking the wrong question when you ask who sinned in this situation. It was very understandable given Jewish thought and theology, but it was still the wrong question to ask. And I think what was happening here is Jesus is saying to the disciples, you want to focus your thought on who's to blame. What you need to do is forget about the blame question and instead ask, what's the purpose? Where is this going to go? In other words, instead of looking back, what happened however many years ago it was when this man was born? Look ahead. What's going to happen now? Yes, there is a time to look back. And so at the end of the year is a natural time to do that. An old year, the end of the year. What happened? But it ought to always be a looking back with the purpose of celebrating what God has done or celebrating what could happen better in the coming year. You don't just live in the past. And that's where blame questions often end up. They leave us stuck in the past. Whose fault was it? Churches do that really well sometimes too. They look back to the glory days. And what happened? How come we're not back there? What can we do to get back to the way we were before? That's usually a dead-end question. Instead, we ought to be looking. And so where can we be going now? Where can we get to a better future? So Jesus' first response to the question is, wrong question. Both options you laid out, neither one is true. But he goes on and he says, but remember this, good can come out of what appears to be bad. This happened that the works of God might be displayed in this blind man. God now has an opportunity to show his power and glory. When do you see the power and the glory of God? Well, sometimes you think of the nature miracles. Think of some of the great things that God did. The Bible is full of them. Think of the Israelites crossing the Red Sea, water drying right up, and then coming down after them. And 40 years later, they crossed the Jordan River. Another great miracle. Think of Jesus all of a sudden in a storm on the Sea of Galilee, and he says, peace, be still, and the water calms and the wind stops blowing. Think, boy, talk about power. True. Shows the glory of God. But you know, it takes just as much power to restore the sight to a man who was congenitally blind as it does to bring water out of a rock like God did in the wilderness. But when the miracle highlights not only the power, but the compassion of God. He sees this man in his hurt and his need and says, I will do something. I will show my glory in that. It adds to the glory of God. God is not only powerful, God is compassionate and caring. And so, Jesus is saying, this happened so that God will get the glory. But it's not just when miracles take place. I think there's another way in which to look at this. Because healing miracles don't always happen. Not all the blind people in the world when Jesus was living ended up having their sight restored. But God's glory can become evident in the midst of pain and loss and disability and disappointment. When things happen that way, it can also be an opportunity to see the glory of God. I will never forget a movie. It was back years ago. It was done with the old reel-to-reel type of things, and I remember seeing it. But it was about a college professor of mine, taught economics. I had him for my only economics class, I think. And shortly after that, he was diagnosed with cancer. He was a Christian. And he said, I want to use my last days to show you and to show the world how a Christian can die. And Tony Brower, an economics professor at Calvin College, had a cameraman following, and they filmed the last year, or whatever it was, of his life, and interviews and talk. How does a Christian die? He was not healed. He wanted to be, but he was not healed. But God was glorified through that event. And you and I know people like that. People who, because they live maybe with chronic conditions, year after year after year, and yet that doesn't destroy them, but they show, I can do all things through Christ, and God gets the glory. And you know people who have lost their jobs, and have turned that into an opportunity to go into a different field, and maybe they don't make nearly the kind of money they used to make, but they get into a service field, and they serve people, and they say, turned out to be a good thing. The horrible earthquake in Haiti, with all of the tragedy there, but it also has shown some powerful things. The resolve of the Haitian people, but also the deep, strong faith of many as they sing. And as after a month, they have a time of pausing, but still singing to God. And what an impact that has made on people. Good can come out of what seems to be bad. And then this story ends with good clearly coming to this man. God's glory works for his good, and it works for our good. In the situation with this man, after Jesus puts the mud and spit on his eyes and says, go wash off in the pool of Siloam, and the man went and washed, and he comes home seeing. But that wasn't the end of the story. That wasn't the only good that came to him. If you read the rest of the story and take a chance to opportunity to do that later today, read the rest of chapter 9. But what a change in this man. He starts out as a blind beggar who all he can do is ask for alms and somebody help, give me some money, I can't do anything else, I need a little something. But from that blind beggar, he turns out to be somebody who dares to stand up against the religious leaders of his day. A little later on, the Pharisees start asking, what's going on here? This happened on the Sabbath, and all those kinds of questions. And they ask him what happened, and he tells them, he says, I don't know much about what happened. He just says, he's a prophet. Later on, they go back to him and find him again, and they say, give glory to God, tell the truth. Is this? We know this man must be a sinner. And his response, he says, well, I don't know whether he's a sinner or not, I don't know. But one thing I know, I was blind, now I see. Well, that wasn't quite the answer the leaders were looking for. They said, well, what did he do? You know, how did this happen? And he says, well, I told you already. You didn't listen. What's the matter? Why, do you want to hear it again? Do you want to become his disciples too? He's getting a little bold. This is not just a blind beggar sitting there. He's talking back to the Pharisees. They're not thrilled with this response. They hurl insults at him. And they just really give it. And then he comes, and I love this. He answers, now that's remarkable. You don't know where he comes from, yet he opened my eyes. We know that God does not listen to sinners. He listens to the godly person who does his will. Nobody has ever heard of opening the eyes of a man born blind. If this man were not from God, he could do nothing. Wow, he's come a long ways. And they throw him out of the synagogue. And then Jesus finds him and touches him in a different way yet. And he says, do you believe in the Son of Man? And he doesn't understand. He says, who is he? Tell me. I want to believe in him. And Jesus says, you've seen him. In fact, he's the one who is speaking to you. And he says, Lord, I believe. And he worshiped him. What a change from a blind beggar to a child of God. God's glory is seen in this man's ultimate good, not just in his physical seeing, but in his spiritual seeing. And the question is, how is God's glory seen in you? You know, sometimes it takes a 2x4 upside the head to get your attention. It's what God has to do to me, and sometimes he has to do it to you. And it bring you from a self-centered living to a life where you can love other people and serve God. And if it takes a 2x4, it's a good thing. Good can come out of what feels like a bad thing when you first get bopped with it. The glory of God. God's glory is seen. And it's seen today. We're going to see it in the Lord's Supper. You look at that and what it's all about, the death of Jesus, it looks like something that must have been really bad. A travesty of justice. Who's to blame? The Pharisees. Who's to blame? Pilate. Well, yeah, okay. You can look at it that way. You can look at it that way and say, well, why did Jesus have to die? That's a more painful question because the answer comes back because of me. I don't want to hear that. But we can still be focused on whose fault. But let's look at it. Why do we have this? Why do we remember? It's for our good. Jesus gives this as nourishment for his people. He gives it to us as a gift.